The Mickey Miles Podcast is brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel, who will handle your family vacation, reunion, honeymoon, corporate incentive trip, or getaway as if it were their own, bringing premium service and expert advice to help you get the most out of your vacation dollar. Visit them at MEI-travel.com or mousefantravel.com.
Hey, I'm Leslie from Minnesota, and I love the Mickey Miles Podcast.
It's Ashley Martin from Dallas, Texas, and you're listening to the Mickey Miles Podcast.
I'm Jessica from New York, and I listen to the Mickey Miles Podcast.
I'm Karen from Arizona, and I listen to the Mickey Miles Podcast.
Hi, I'm Tanya Kaharski from Washington, New Jersey, and I listen to the Mickey Miles Podcast.
Hi, this is Chad Wyrick from Norton, Massachusetts, and I listen to the Mickey Miles and More Podcast.
Hi, this is John Pelkey, race host for Run Disney, and I listen to the Mickey Miles Podcast. Good luck, everybody.
This is the Mickey Miles and More Podcast, your one stop for information on Disney races, Disney vacations, Disney theme parks, and more. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles and More Podcast, Michelle Scribner-McLean, Chris Eliopoulos, and Mike Scopa.
Welcome to episode 540 of the Mickey Miles and More Podcast. My name is Mike Scopa, and with me on today's show is Michelle Scribner-McLean and Chris Eliopoulos, and we are in part two of our discussion with Jeff Galloway, who is the Run Disney race consultant and former Olympian. Jeff is just about to handle some questions from our listeners, and perhaps one of these questions is from you. So let's get right to the questions. Well, we have a number of questions from our listeners. I'm sure that you recognize some of these names, Jeff, and we're going to go around the table asking the questions. It'll go Michelle, then Chris, and then me. We'll take our turns. And so with that, Michelle, why don't you read the first question? I believe it's from Amy Chase.
Yes, we have a lot of them, Jeff. So
good.
Yeah, so Amy is from South Dakota, and she says, Jeff, thank you for enabling me to do things I could never have dreamed of. I'm currently training for the Dopey Challenge, and I just wanted to finish with a smile on my face and be able to enjoy my week of vacation at Walt Disney World following the races. About a month later, I'm running another marathon, which I'd like to do for time. How do you recommend approaching the remainder of my Dopey training and then the period between Dopey and the next race? Should I be slowing my runs to accommodate my tired legs of multiple runs or pushing the pace to get stronger for my second race? Should I plan to do one more long run between the two events? If so, how long? Thanks in advance for your thoughts. I know my question is specific to my situation, but hopefully it will help others as well.
Very good.
Yeah, that's I don't think we've ever had that question before.
Well, it's a little involved, so I'll try to pick it apart here. But I just commend you for taking on these challenges and finding that you don't have to be out of commission when you find the right run, walk, run strategy. So leading up to the Walt Disney World weekend, just do the training and do it nice and slowly. And the key is to really walk the Saturday workouts in preparation for the half marathon. So you really can go into the long run on Sunday with some strength in your legs, and you can recover faster. And don't ever be afraid to just put in long stretches of walking if you're getting extra tired. The dirty little secret is you're going to get all the endurance even if you walked the whole distance of the long run. So walking when you don't feel too good will give you all of the distance. Now let's go and talk about the marathon about a month afterwards. If it is in fact 4 weeks after the Walt Disney World weekend, then you don't need to do another long run. The minimum is to run 30 minutes every other day. And it is good on the second or third weekend to run up to an hour. But really, I know countless numbers of people that have really parlayed that first marathon as their long run for the second one if it's 4 weeks or less. Now, if it's 5 weeks, then you would lose approximately 3 miles of your 26 miles. So you're still going in with about 23 miles worth of endurance as long as you have been running at least 30 minutes every other day. If it's 6 weeks from Walt Disney World weekend, I recommend putting a long one in at the three-week mark, and it's best if that were 26, because then that gives you all the endurance you're going to need, so you don't have to hit the wall.
That's terrific. Hmm. And isn't that pretty much what you and Barb do every month? Don't you do a marathon a month?
That's what we do, and we absolutely love doing it. People say, oh, that is so arduous. Well, we run 15 seconds, and we walk 15 seconds, and we could run the next day if we wanted to. It's just really a wonderful way to do these marathons.
Nice.
Crazy. Okay, so our second question is from friend of the pod, Lori Wiener, who writes, Jeff, first, I want to thank you for introducing me to interval training. I would advise anyone who hasn't attended Jeff's running school to attend. Great information. I attended Jeff's school in Grand Cayman last December. Do you have any advice to fueling for Goofy? I know to keep hydrated, but about sugar sources and salt intake, what type of food to eat for pre-race the night before? Should we be adding more calories? What say you, Jeff?
Well, again, congratulations for taking on this challenge. And I've seen so many people over the years who have benefited greatly from the empowerment that they get from the training journey and then the completion of it. And of course, then there's the medals. Now let's get to the answer, the nutritional part. The fact is that most of the food you eat needs to have about 36 hours to be digested, metabolized, and then be available for use. The only exception there is if you somehow have deprived yourself of the amount of blood sugar that you need and your blood sugar starts dropping. Don't do that. Keep snacking the day before. And the best way to figure out which snacks are best is practice eating those snacks, various snacks, the day before your remaining long runs. And then edit out the ones that aren't working and then find ones that digest more easily. Usually people on the day before a long run and then the race itself can eat a fairly regular breakfast and a fairly regular lunch. But throughout the afternoon and certainly in the evening, you don't want to overeat. So find snacks that are going to digest pretty easily. And too much loading the night before, it can lead to unloading on the course itself. So I don't advise that.
Wow, there's a way to put it.
Yeah, really. What to eat during? Well, I have really worked on this with thousands of runners over the years, and I've come up with a rule of thumb based on success, and that is for water, 2 to 4 ounces every 2 miles, 2 to 4 ounces every 2 miles. And for sugar, 30 to 40 calories every 2 miles. And so by smaller amounts taken regularly, you keep that blood sugar propped up. And again, it's a rule of thumb. So start out with that as a guideline, and then you can adjust as to what works best for you.
Very nice. Yay.
All right.
Mike?
Michael. He's on mute. He did it.
Yes, you're right. I'm on mute. So Jeff, Amy Chase is back with another question, and I'm guessing that you've heard this before, so you'll be ready, willing, and able to answer this. So Amy says, am I too late for another question? I've used your training plans for all of previous races. Thank you. So I've been following your dopey training plan religiously up to this point. Do we really need to walk the first day of the back-to-back mileage in the goofy slash dopey training plans? Walking for those high mileage days seems unbearable and time-consuming. In lieu of walking, would slowing down the run pace be acceptable? And if so, how much slower would you recommend? Thanks.
I have the same question. I thought the same thing. I can't wait.
Well, you know, my method is always designed to help people lower the anticipated risk of injury and exhaustion. And so my advice then is based on what has done that. And I can tell you that in the training particularly, the walking the day before the really long ones, in other words, walking on Saturday, gives you all the endurance, but it doesn't leave you as tired as it would be from running slowly the day before. So then let's go ahead to race weekend. The concept, again, is to save some resources for the marathon because you're going to need them. And therefore, to go with as much walking as you can let yourself do. And one way you can do that is to significantly reduce the amount of running and increase the amount of walking. A lot of folks have used a 10-second run and a 30-second walk, and that has slowed them down enough. But even more important, if you're only running for 10 seconds and walking for 30, you're going to erase that fatigue, and you're going to have some strength when you get out there the next day in the marathon.
Hmm. Awesome. I like it. All right. The next question is from Allison Ramos Miller, who wants to know, what are the symptoms to look for when one needs fuel? I have fuel foods that work for my stomach, but figuring out the timing of when to use them is tough.
There are individual issues. However, the general principle that has worked best for most of the people I've worked with is to fuel from the beginning and fuel regularly. The regular distance period that has worked best has been every 2 miles. And some people like to convert that into minutes, and that's fine. But taking in some water and sugar right from the beginning keeps your blood sugar level up there so that you don't suddenly hit a blood sugar wall, which will happen if you're not ingesting enough regularly throughout. So the water and sugar doses are, as I mentioned a few minutes ago, 2 to 4 ounces of water, 30 to 40 calories of sugar, and that has worked like a charm for most of the folks, but you can edit that a little bit to see what works best for you.
Let's make sure you try it before you go for the big races, right?
Yeah.
Practice it. Okay, so our next question comes from Avery Weber. I have a similar problem. I hate treadmills. I find them tedious. So the question is, would love some tips for treadmill training for when I need to train indoors in winter weather. What do you, Jeff? Any good tips for that?
Well, you folks have had more experience with treadmills than I have. And quite honestly, I hate treadmill running. I really do. And I avoid it as much as I can. But there are a few days a year when I'm in Boise or Missoula or somewhere like that during the dead of winter. And the outside with the frozen precipitation is not an option for me. So the idea is to prop up the treadmill 1 to 3 degrees. That helps the simulation in terms of the foot, the way the foot operates, similar to running outside. Then start the treadmill more gently in the beginning and then ease into a pace that works for you. But at the front end, before you really start, reacquaint yourself with the treadmill because there are a lot of differences in the way that you can adjust running and walking. Some of them don't have a very good way to do that. And so what I do when I'm at a hotel that really doesn't have a very high-tech treadmill is I will actually lift myself off the treadmill and walk around the treadmill and keeping it going and then just get back on and take off from there. The concept is really the same. You can have some fun type of workouts by picking up the pace, by changing the pace, by changing the elevation a little bit on the short runs. But on the long runs, keep it flat and keep it slow. And if you start to huff and puff, slow down even more.
I've never been a fan of the treadmill. I don't think I'll ever be a fan of the treadmill.
Yeah. It's like hopping in place.
I think you're right, Chris. It's like you're jumping up and down. You're not really propelling yourself. And I don't know if it's as beneficial in building your stamina as, you know, regular running. So,
well, it is pretty much. I mean, the reality is that a lot of treadmills are not calibrated and will tell you that you've run farther or faster than you really have. So if you suspect that you're on a treadmill that is that, then you could add 10% to the distance and you'd be covered.
So, Jeff, aside, kind of a follow-up question. When you're on the Disney cruise, do you run on the track or do you run on the treadmill if you're running there?
I go outside and run around the big track out there.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Enjoy the wind in your face.
Right.
The next question is the shortest question ever in the history of the Mickey Mouse podcast asking Jeff Galloway questions. It comes from Jennifer Taylor, and it's very simple. She says, raise your arm or not to raise your arm? That is the question. I've seen conflicting opinions. What do you say, Jeff?
Well, Jennifer, the bottom line is, raise your arm unless the raising of it hits somebody along the way. So you do have to be aware of your fellow runners around you, but that is also true about raising your arm. You want to make them aware of you. And so what we recommend, we have these $20 timers that beep and vibrate. And if you set it on a 5-beep countdown at the beginning of the race, then the people around you, when you wave your hand at first and they hear the countdown, then they're going to tend to know what's going on. And then you can reset it later on for 2 beeps if you want. But in the beginning, it's good to get everybody's attention so that you don't have any of those collisions.
I think that's the telltale sign of a Galloway runner, right? I mean, that's something kind of either invented by you or invented by your runners, because I've never seen that anywhere else.
Absolutely. We train people to have courtesy for others, and that includes getting over to the side of the road before taking a walk break. When you get to water stops, move over to the side, one side of the road to get your water. Don't get it and drink in the middle, because the middle is really for people that want to run through.
Okay, the next is from Kari Brooks, and Kari says, hi, Jeff. I read in something you wrote that cross-training will make you fitter but won't help your running. Why is that? I feel that when I lift weights and do yoga, my running improves. Is it all in my head? If it doesn't help, why do elite athletes do it? Thanks so much for all the support you give to your sport. You and your method have enabled me to keep running when I was originally told I couldn't. Thanks.
Well, Kari, if you think that something is helping you and it's not hurting you, do it, because the belief in that alone is going to help you. The research is not showing benefits to running, with one exception, and that is running in the water in the deep end of the pool. It actually helps to smooth out your running gait. So that's a really good one. Other than that, you will help your health, and you'll prolong your life statistically. There was a study that came out in the New England Journal of Medicine earlier this year, and it showed that most exercises, for every hour you exercised, you extended your lifespan by 2 to 3 hours. Pretty good. Running extends the lifespan 7 times. So, but the other point is, you're going to be healthier if you exercise regularly, add more cross training exercise that will not tire your legs out, so that you will feel good when you run.
Nice. Thank you. Chris.
All right. Next up is Kim Moss, who writes, I'm a Brit who has been listening to your podcast for a couple of years and heard you talk to Jeff and about his methods many times, and I was lucky enough to chat to Jeff at a Run Disney Expo. I am about to start interval training for the first time as I step up from a half to a full marathon. So I've been looking into it on local groups on Facebook. I was tickled to see Jeff's name used as a verb by locals. Example, I've been Jeffing at 90-30. I Jeffed from 6 miles onwards. In fact, I am now the proud member of the group Girls That Jeff. I've never heard you guys refer to the Galloway method as Jeffing and wondered whether it's a global phenomenon. Whatever you call it, I can't wait to Jeff my way around Edinburgh next May. Jeff, are you a verb?
Well, I'm honored. I have heard about the groups, and hey, when you become a noun or a verb, I'm just very honored by either of those. As a matter of fact, we've had such response over in Great Britain that Barbara and I plan to go over there in 2018. So we're trying to figure out a time period right now to do that. And if anybody is interested who is over there, just sign up for our free newsletter at jeffgalloway.com and also sign up for our Jeff Galloway Facebook fans, because we'll get the word out there.
So what would you do, Jeff? You'd have a clinic over there?
That's correct. Mm-hmm. We would probably have several, because Great Britain is great. It's a big place, and there are a lot of transportation issues and so forth. So, yeah, we're looking to spending a few days over there, getting around and meeting a number of the folks who have used our method.
Bless you. Do you have to run on the other side of the road?
You do.
I do.
I know. You want to stay safe. I often tell a story. I was there last September, and I was running on a rail trail, and everybody kept on looking at me, and I thought, what's going on? And I was running on the wrong side.
I've driven over there on the wrong side, too, and boy, that's a scary thing. It was very scary for my family.
I bet.
If you run in Australia, do you have to run counterclockwise, too? Or is that just the toilet?
Well, I have run down there, and I don't remember running counterclockwise.
All right, Michael, what's next?
What is next is part 3 of our visit with Jeff Galloway, Chris, and that will be happening on the next episode of the Mickey Miles and More podcast. So for Jeff Galloway and for Michelle Scribner-McLean and for Chris Aliopoulos, this is Mike Scopa saying we'll see you on the road and in the parks.
The Mickey Miles podcast is brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel, who will handle your family vacation, reunion, honeymoon, corporate incentive trip, or getaway as if it were their own, bringing premium service and expert advice to help you get the most out of your vacation dollar. Visit them at MEI-travel.com or mousefantravel.com.
We hope you enjoyed listening to today's episode of the Mickey Miles and More podcast. If you would like to support the podcast, please go to mickeymiles.podbean.com and click the green Become a Patron button in the upper right-hand corner of the menu bar. We thank you for your support. Don't forget, our discussion continues on Facebook at facebook.com/mickeymilespodcast. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/mickeymilespod. Last of all, don't forget, if you have any questions for us, you can send them to questions@mickeymilespodcast.com, and we'll try to answer them as soon as possible. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles and More podcast, this is Rick Gregg saying thanks for listening and all your support. And until next time, we'll see you on the road.